It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. Do not adjust your speakers. I am deathly ill, but fear not. I think the only man who would disagree is Anthony Fauci. You cannot pass germs to your colleague from this far away and through a monitor. So here, as always, with Len, to the Access of Easy. It's my flu game. It's my flu game. I don't know if you remember the Jordan flu game in the 90s.
No. Was it a playoff game?
I don't remember if it was a playoff game. A lot of lore around it, though. Might have been against the Jazz in 96. I forget.
Yeah, I can't add anything to that. Let me guess. He came up big?
I don't remember if he did or not. He probably did. I mean, when did Jordan not come up big, except for that one time he got suspended a year for gambling?
Or when he came back from retirement and played for the Wizards / Bullets, whatever.
He was good. He was good those years. Yeah, 25 points per game. Played all 82. Oh, he was good. This is not related to Access of Easy, but speaking of gambling, did you see the NBA today? Serious gambling scandal broke out. How about that?
I'm not surprised. It's every major sport has this problem.
Yeah. There's Jim Rome, who's a famous sports commentator, famous provocateur, I would also say, getting on his show today and telling everyone that this is the last thing Powder needs. He calls Adam Silver the Commissioner Powder because he looks like that character from the horror movie in the 90s.
I don't even know who Powder is, to be honest. I have to take a look and compare him to Silver. But either way, I stand by it. This is not the first year or the last year hear of it. If they do enough digging, every sport has this problem. Everything has this problem like this.
I agree.
Elections.
Yeah. 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 Access of Easy host betting on the over under for the length of the show. This is a poly market on that. Did you know that?
I'm always betting the over.
I'm slowly getting rich on the under. So that's why I don't say too much yet. Okay. Let's get into the usual stuff here. Last week's headline, or last week's quote, I should say, tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn. We're looking for Ben Franklin as the answer. And Adam got it. Congrats to you, Adam. This week's quote, nothing is permanent except change. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Remember, you can only look on the back of your cough drops for the answer. And once you get past acetaminophen, there ain't much to look at. So good luck. Get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Did you listen to last week's Access of Easy, by the way?
No, I didn't.
Mark explaining the rules around how he chooses whether or not the person who gets the right answer gets to win or not.
So it's arbitrary?
It's not arbitrary. You just can't have the same person getting more than one round of renewals per year. That's the rule.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's more fair than we give credit for sure.
That's fair. I was going to say they use ChatGPT to pick it. Multiple winners, right? But
yeah. I used to record that in person, by the way. We had a nice hamburger after. Shot the shit there for a while. It was good. It was really good.
I wonder if that's where you got sick. Because
you know what? It's hard to say where patient zero is because Mark is not sick. And a bunch of other people are not sick. But if I look in the conference speakers Telegram channel, everybody's sick. So hard to say. We went to a cocktail hour thing on the Thursday night at Mont Royal, the mall, which is like, have you been to Vegas before?
No.
It's like a Vegas casino mall. Everything's, 50-foot ceiling. All the stores are extremely high end. Really, really nice. And the cocktail bar was nice too. Conference put it on. But anyway, I want to talk more about the conference maybe on our show next week. Let's talk about some of the latest and greatest. Amazon Web Services outage.
Where were you when that happened?
I'll never forget. I'll never forget where I was when it happened. I was on my couch. Were you affected by the outage? How affected was the average person?
It depends if you were relying on a certain server, certain applications that are directly tied to AWS. I wasn't.
Yeah.
Some people were, but anyways, the problem, did you know that it was because of a DNS issue?
I did. Right?
That's basically it. Yeah. So somehow it wasn't resolving the host name correctly to an IP address. And that's what the whole problem was. So they were saying like some of the services that were impacted were the Alexa Smart application or Smart Assistant.
Yeah. PlayStation Network again was affected.
Oh, PSN was down. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't quite down, but the connection was pretty spotty. So that was
Snapchat, Fortnite, Duolingo.
Yeah.
Signal.
Well, Simple, TradingView, a few other services not really working that well that day.
It just goes to show you like how much the modern world is reliant on this very centralized service.
Yeah, buddy.
And Roblox. Imagine all the kids out there that were just like,
damn, parents right? actually had to parent that day. That's crazy.
Or they had to go outside and play, right?
Like, true.
You know, when you see something like this, and then what's the answer? It's costly, but you'd have to do your own in-house type of solution. Are these companies that are, you know, Roblox isn't a small company. They're publicly traded, right?
They're huge. Yeah, they're huge.
Are they going to start looking to take advantage of their own to make an in-house version that is... No, that's too bad, right? It goes to show you that so much infrastructure is tied directly to AWS and the US East, particularly that server. So, but the one thing I want to just point out is Signal, of all things, which is supposed to be an encrypted type of service, that was down for people in Europe for whatever reason. Goes to show you, like, Signal may not be all of what is cracked up to be.
I don't know what the... What is the sort of red line for those messaging platforms as far as like privacy and convenience? The one thing I keep seeing, and actually it's true for this X encrypted chat that's being plugged now pretty heavily by Elon and a few of his favorite meme accounts. This idea that if you can recover messages device to device, what does that mean?
That means it's those things are stored somewhere.
They're somewhere. Exactly. And so like I don't know. I think there's going to be shortly, in no small part to some of the stuff we'll talk about later, Bill C2, C8, C9, I think I can't remember what the other bills were, but there's going to be a third sort of tier of messaging coming soon, I think. Right now you have basically two tiers. You have the standard sort of encrypted message, iMessage, WhatsApp, the stuff that you are trusting to a rather large, multinational, publicly traded, et cetera, company. Then there's a second tier, the Signal Telegram tier, where there's, you know, the lore basically tells you that, God, my lips are so dry and cracked up, basically tells you that they are private and they're like, you know, it's like extra private somehow. It's better than iMessage, better than SMS, better than WhatsApp. Like, okay, maybe. But I think that there's going to be a third tier emerging here soon. And that third tier is going to be the Simplex or Simple X. It's going to be the session. It's going to be the key base. It's going to be the apps that are a little more difficult to use, require public private key encryption. Keybase is a great example. You need a public private key pair to use Keybase. And they won't be convenient to use at all. They'll be very difficult to use. They may not have apps. They may be, PWAs, progressive web apps only, or even something more difficult than that. And the reason you're going to have that emerging is because people are not going to be willing to take a chance with their messaging, with their comms, as the government, you know, not to wrap up Amazon Web Services being down with government overreach, but we have to here on the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And as the risks become greater and the goalposts move and the window widens in terms of what's not allowed, I don't see what other choice you have than to go this third tier, right? Do you feel like that's coming too? Are people in your normie life talking about this stuff or just like you and me?
No, not even people in our inner circles really talking about this. Let's be perfectly honest. Have you heard anything? And like,
well, why don't we transition to the Bill C2 and C8 and C9 and because it does help answer that question. So Mark and I did a fireside chat, which was very well received. I got a lot of good feedback, including from people who came to speak to me immediately after and said, "Look, this was probably the most important talk of the conference. People are not talking about these things." And Mark has obviously been around a long time when it comes to privacy, and because he's, you know, sort of heading up a company that has a lot of data and is, I would say, a great bottleneck if somebody in power, in charge, or with some influence wants to do some damage to a website, a corporation, or an individual. The reason I wanted to transition to this story now is because these bills, like I said, are really cracking down on freedom of speech, freedom of transaction, and all these other things that you sort of take for granted, but as you're watching from the outside, the pot is getting hotter, the water is starting to boil, and people don't seem to notice. And at the end of that talk, which is available on the website, by the way, accessofeasy.com. It's in the newsletter as well. At the end of that talk, we had time for a question, and an older guy asked if we thought that any of the services that we were using and considered to be private were actually private. And, you know, it was interesting to hear in a room full of people, like you said, that are really terminally online, Bitcoiners are privacy focused or more privacy focused than average, I would say. Nobody had heard of these other apps. Keybase, Simplex was, you know, is very quiet when we were talking about those. So I don't know what the solution is for, you know, sort of to put these two stories together. The idea that Amazon's web servers or web services servers can go down and, you know, your private messages are affected by that makes you wonder about how private they are. But then the default sort of second option, the cascade effect that comes from that, people won't go to the higher up, more difficult services because they don't even know they exist. They're going to go down to WhatsApp and Twitter group chats and like whatever else, Discord, you know, whatever, God knows whatever other wide open servers there are, right? Which is frustrating because, you know, you're watching all over the world now a real renewed and I would say ultra focused effort to get into people's private comms. And the idea that if something goes wrong on Amazon, you default to SMS or something that's even less secure than that, I think that's bad. We have to do a better job educating in the privacy space and in the Bitcoin space about these other services. I'm going to get back on Keybase this week at some point. And I think I'm going to use that for real. Like if I'm having a serious conversation with somebody about business or about money or about something that's, you know, that could be branded unpopular, that's what I'm going to use. I'm going to go with something like that. That's not portable, not simple, not convenient, but private. And I think a lot of people need to start thinking this way. You have to default to more private, not less private, if something goes sideways with the service you're most used to.
What, you know, the financial equivalent to what you're describing is Bitcoin, right? Something that is a little harder to use, not as polished. There may be some applications that people may not want to use because it's harder to use it. But the people, what are they going to do? They'll opt for the easiest route. And they do that. It's simply just Bitcoin.
Yeah. Right? Same ethos. I agree.
And what are people going to do? Whatever. They'll
pay the price. They'll pay the price, right? That's the problem. And like I said, to kind of tie a bow on the you know, the conference story, you know, Mark and I did that talk and some of the people in the crowd came up to me after, you know, I was on my way to lunch, trying to get to lunch. I barely got to eat, unfortunately, but sign of a good talk. And were asking me about, you know, how do you balance, you know, privacy with being able to like enjoy your group chats, your social lives, your things like that. And I just said, you know, part of it, and I hate to say this because it really does go against the Bitcoin ethos in a lot of ways, but I said it on stage and I'll say it here now too. You have to have some level of trust in the people you talk to. And, you know, you and me, when we talk to each other, I'm not afraid of what I send you and you're not afraid of what you send me. And I know that whatever I send you is not going to go anywhere. And, you know, I think you know the same for me. And you have to take seriously the sort of character of the people you're interacting with. You can't be fly by night with the things you say and who you say them to. You can't be fly by night with the things you share about your personal life, personal information, the people you meet nearby your house, the people you meet outside of your comfort zone, the people who see what kind of car you drive, the people like, does this suck? Yeah, it sucks. And is it going to get harder as Bitcoin gets more expensive or as, like I said earlier, the number of things that are undesirable become longer and longer, according to the powers that be? Yeah, it's going to be difficult. But you have no choice. Like, get used to it now. Find your tribe now. And then when push comes to shove, you'll be in a better position to kind of keep living the way that you want and keep speaking the way that you want and not worry too much about things the way that, you know, the SMS masses may have to.
Another one is using the banks and relying on the banks, trusting the banks, which
is... This is crazy too. Like, where did this come from?
we were subjected to this.
Not quite like this. Like, we kind of expected it, but some of these cases in the article, like, why does a 70-year-old guy suddenly not meet the risk appetite of his bank?
You were saying that you were expecting us to fall outside the risk appetite of
credit union. Yeah, people who don't know, like Len and I, still have not been able to get a bank account for our podcast. But I mean, we found other ways. The thing is, like, these guys, I don't know exactly what's going on in this account. You know, for Carol Kahn, who's 73, Bank of Montreal gives her 2 weeks' notice; they'll be closing her accounts. I don't know. What is the risk app? She's getting a government pension check, but then it's too risky for the bank. Like, how do those two things jive?
That's a good question, but they do have this power regardless, yeah. Right? They have every legal obligation to end a relationship with the customer if they deem it to be the correct action. Is this debanking is within their purview, but, and who do you complain to? They can't go to the ombudsman, because if you do, they say that it's an agreement that the bank can close an account without providing a reason.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense. Try asking somebody in this world to operate without a bank account. When you get paid, they don't pay you in cash.
No.
When you work for someone, they have to deposit that somewhere, presumably a bank account. And if you can't get a bank account, what do you do? And it's not like these are like just one-offs. Like, there's so many of these cases. Like, when this came out, like, hundreds of people were just pouring these stories as to what happened, that they too were debanked, and the ombudsman was even claiming that there's been hundreds of cases that were logged with them.
Yeah,
that's sad. And
it's not right.
And, you know, they bring up the old same old thing, risk management and anti-money laundering.
It's actually worse than that, though. Like, if you look at the letter, It's like intentionally vague, but it's worse than just like AML risk appetite. It's your personal activities fall outside our risk appetite. What does that mean?
Which then leads me to believe, when you go and purchase Bitcoin,
yeah,
there's a paper trail when you do that.
Oh, if yeah,
you're
doing for it
the
sure.
proper way.
I'll see you in the gulags, buddy. I'll save you a spot.
So yeah, that's it's a sad state of reality. That's
do you think that people who are, like, you know, claiming that we're seeing ghosts when it comes to social credit scoring coming here, look at this and think, maybe they're right. This is like, that's anything about my personal activities is social credit scoring. It's plain and simple. There's no other way to put it. Well, how else could you describe what else would that be? What activities am I doing? They're looking at my bank account. What do they see? Okay. I buy too much stuff on Nike.com. I buy too much from Bull Bitcoin. I get my oil changed twice a year, sometimes three times if I drive a lot. Like what are they looking at there that makes them think that they can just like take me offline? I think the answer is actually easy. The answer is probably that person like donated somewhere they didn't like, bought a weapon or something like that. Bought maybe a non-lethal kinetic device. Like, you can get them here in Canada. I can't remember the name of the brand that sells them, but there's a few different options. These things are like I said earlier, the number of things that are somehow now caught in this web of undesirable and unpalatable, not just undesirable, but unpalatable for banks is growing. And like, much like we talk about the pinch from inflation and currency kind of coming from both sides, the desire people have to do these things because society's not serving them, and the number of things you're allowed to do shrinking. Like the pinch is coming from both sides. And so I think you're going to see more of this, honestly. And there's a thin line for banks. Like, people already don't like banks. People already don't keep deposits in banks. And by the way, people already don't have money to leave in banks. So the banks can't kick everybody out, but there's some people they can kick out. The question is, like, where's the line for them? Where's the line for us? I don't know. But it is very much an us versus them dichotomy, I think.
And it's funny. They don't even have your money if you are a
customer. Yeah, you can't even get it back. They give you 24 hours to take it out, or whatever, 30 days to take it out. But if you go there and try and take it, they ask you a million questions.
You can feel the runaround. Yeah, it's my money. Like, I don't want to get it. And it's wild, whatever, man. Right? And anybody that's looking at this and saying that, you know, it's never going to happen to them – right? That's the reality. That's what most
You know what the craziest thing is too? Like, do you ever wonder if you were to go sell a huge chunk of Bitcoin? Like, let's say you wanted to get six figures in Bitcoin out of your stash. Do you think the bank would let you make a deposit for that amount from whatever exchange, Bull Bitcoin, they would give you the fight of your life to get that money.
Yeah, where did it come from? Why?
100%. Yeah. Show me your transaction history. Show me this. Show me that.
Yeah. And then they're going to go back to the rationale for anti-money laundering, right? Yeah, AML. Yeah. And there may be some validity to that because
there's
maybe
not. Some people... There's not. Well, it's just so bogus. Like this is the thing that worries me the most about Bitcoin, to be honest with you. If you ever want to go back to cash for some reason, or you need cash for something, heaven forbid something happens to you and you have to sell Bitcoin for cash, the likelihood that you're able to get the cash, it's lower than 20%, honestly, it feels like.
Well, this whole AML stuff, what it has done, it's shifted how the money is being deposited into the bank. Instead of directly doing it, they're finding other ways, like renovating a house, for instance, with dirty money, selling it, and then it's all clean, or something along those lines. And then that's the way people are going to get around it. So there is a lot of dirty money floating around, no doubt about it. You're just not directly depositing it into the bank, or they're just never depositing it anywhere. Like, it's just somehow remaining in some sort of other store of value.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
All right, okay. Let's talk about this Apple stuff, because this guy named Gibson, a security expert over here, and he is specializing in finding vulnerabilities in the iPhone. And he previously developed offensive surveillance tools for governments, right? Government clients. And well, one day he received a warning from Apple, and it said it's one of these threat notification alerts that come from Apple saying that the device was targeted by mercenary spyware. Have you ever gotten this type of warning from Apple before?
Not that important yet, but I'll tell you, if I ever get that notice, no one's going to know. So... yeah, I haven't
received it yet, though. Keep that quiet, because that likely means that Pegasus may have been installed and is infected. That's the thing that people could buy. We'll talk about Pegasus in just a little bit. Normally, this is sold to nation states, right? They're the ones that could buy this and use this software. And so this guy got this, and it's a little bit different, because in the past, a lot of this spyware stuff, they was installed on quote-unquote high-risk individuals, like journalists, human rights activists, and political. So the people that, I don't want to say they have a target in their back, but you could kind of understand why they would, which is rather sad. But now this is a shift towards somebody else. And why would a technical expert receive this type of thing? Like, the question is why? But I guess, by targeting this developer, maybe they could find out a little bit of information before something happens, like maybe attempting to steal some knowledge this person has, maybe front running an attack. We'll get information from front running an attack that is going to be pending. Mm-hmm. There could be an offensive cyber attack coming up, and this guy might have some knowledge. Like, it just seems odd that they're going after him. But this guy is probably not alone, right? Like, I suspect other developers out there are going to be receiving this Apple warning in a not too distant future. And they say one of the things you should do is use the lockdown mode. And that's a way to protect yourself if ever you are in this type of situation. I find it interesting that Apple is able to determine that a phone has been infected and then provide this type of warning.
Well, I know what you're going to say next.
No, I'm going to leave it like that.
Well, I'll say it. The question is, if they know something's happened to your phone, what does that mean? Are they watching every phone at all times for that kind of breach, right?
I don't know if they're actively watching it. It's more like an internal thing that is looking, and it will
ping on the device. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. And then once it sees some suspicious activity that the software in the phone finds, then it pings Apple and tells them, and then they investigate further to see if there's some validity. Then they somehow get into your phone, investigate without you knowing, and figure it out. I think that's probably the course of action. And if they can do that, that's whatever. What can I say?
I don't really have much to say about this story, because it's incomplete, right? We don't know how this turns out just yet. But the thing I would say, I guess, since I have to say something, it is a podcast. I think you're right about the rationale you would have if you were someone trying to get into these phones. If you're someone who's a certified Apple, you know, white hat, then the likelihood that you catch another exploit is much higher than just some random person on 4chan or something like that. So you want to get into these people's devices and see what they're looking at, see what they're talking about, and see what they're digging into. If you can find a zero day in an iPhone software
or any device
before anyone else does, like, that's big, man.
Yeah, if you really, can find a zero day in any device, be it an Apple phone, an Android phone, a desktop, a laptop, whatever, that's a great deal of power that one could wield.
Yeah,
because they can make life a living heck.
Right? Totally. Me and Mark were talking last week about the dynamics between like companies and white hats and the, you know, sort of bug bounties and stuff. It was kind of neat. It was a good conversation. I didn't really know the mechanisms of it before, but if you're, you know, unsure, go back and listen to that and apply it to this too.
Well, we talked about Pegasus. Let's talk about the NSO group. And those are the people that are behind Pegasus software. And there's been a legal battle between them and WhatsApp, well, Meta, because they're saying that there was secrecy. They were trying to get information, and it was installed, the Pegasus, on phones, 1,400 devices worldwide. And, you know, as I was mentioning, journalists, human rights activists, political people like diplomats. And so that could be really brutal. And it was there, and it was getting information without people really knowing, without any sort of interaction, it was able to get information. Well, the court case has been heard, and it turns out that, well, they wanted it to get $167 million settlement in damages. But the judge decided to reduce it to only $4 million. So NSO has to only fork up just $4 million instead of $167 million. But either way, that money was going to come from somewhere out west. That's my guess. But yeah, they're saying that the stuff that the NSO group was doing was indeed illegal. So they acknowledged the fact that it was wrong and against the law. But it said it didn't meet the legal standard of particularly egregious enough to justify the very large fine. Imagine being one of these people that were impacted by this Pegasus software and you have information. And maybe, you know, people could have been tortured or worse. And you come out, you know, if you're a family member or somebody that lost their life, or you indeed were tortured as a result of this, and you see that the settlement is only a mere $4 million. Like, this is $4 million in 2025 terms. Like, if it was 1990s, like, you know, you can understand it's a lot. But now, you know, you could go to the porta potty and crap out $4 million if you really try hard enough.
Yeah, if you get the printer button.
It's like a slap in the face more than
Do you think this is? Do you think this is a legit, like, lawsuit? Like, what are your feelings on being able to get into people's devices to stop certain things from happening? Like there is some line here, right? I don't know where the line is. But there is some line here where the NSO group would say, look, you know, we have to do this because these terrorist groups or, you know, rogue actors are, quote unquote, going dark, which I think is actually the technical term. Like, they're not using any of the normal communications methods that we can pick off with a warrant. We have to use these other means because it means public safety is, you know, less in jeopardy. Now, that's obviously a slippery slope, but that's the case they're making. And by the way, NSO releases a transparency report every year. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. So, like, I'm looking at it right now. They have a huge, like, whole thing here about some of the stuff they've done and some of the, you know, people they've helped and countries they operate in and all this different stuff. Like, I don't know. It's not my favorite thing, but there's worse ways to do this. My big beef is that, like, I would feel, you know what the worst part about this is? I would feel better about this if it wasn't being used by any governments and it was just being used by, like, white hats on some internet forum. I would honestly feel better about what I see than if it was being sold to governments.
So the company is not publicly traded.
No.
But they have no reason to disclose anything.
No, they don't have to be honest. Exactly. Yeah, they don't have to be honest.
So this transparency report, do you think that they're releasing it?
I'll tell you something. They said last year, you know, they say they received 36 internal whistleblower complaints. So, like, they're putting that out there. I don't know. Again, like, NSO is a group we talk about a lot, and I'm not sure how legitimate's not the right word. I'm not sure how honest they are, to be honest with you.
That's here's something right interesting. Yeah. I can't go on their website. I'm blocked because I'm using a VPN.
Yeah. You know what? When I loaded it up, it did take a while for it to load too. So they're obviously checking for like DDoS and stuff.
Well, mine says 403 forbidden because I'm using a VPN. It's just I'm just a block from them.
Now the most interesting thing is when I click the transparency report, it takes me to like what looks to be a barely encrypted WordPress page for the PDF. So I don't know. Make of all this what you will, but
exactly. Run it by ChatGPT or something and see. If
Who wrote this? Did you write this?
See if there's that double dash type thing that's extra long.
That's right. We got to find it. It's interesting though. Like I do think there's a reasonable case to be made that we would all feel better if this was just some anon group, as opposed to, by the way, we're selling this to governments that, you know, don't want you to talk about certain things on the internet. That's my feeling anyway.
We should declare independence, you and I, as the CBP.
Secede?
Raise a flag somewhere and try to buy the software. Because
you'll change the name to Secede BP and and get out of here. Yeah.
I want to get access to this Pegasus software and start installing it on a bunch of people's phones. Right? Maybe that's the case.
Whose phone would you put it on first?
I don't want to say it, but I'll... Peter Schiff. Peter Schiff right away. Yeah, and I'm going to design... I'm kidding, by the way. It's just tongue-in-cheek. And I'll design the passport and the flag, and no problem. And of course, the native currency will be Bitcoin. That's right.
Okay, we're out of here. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for the latest greatest in data breach and overreach. And don't forget, sign up for the newsletter, sign up for the podcast, YouTube as well. We have a channel there. And until next time, take care of yourselves.
Take care.